are back. Okay, very good. Hour number two, we're going over to what may be the pivotal, what would you call it? I guess the opening salvo in what could be six or seven wars around the globe that may go off semi-simultaneously. Russell Bentley is back with us tonight. He was here Friday, and I got some very nice email about that interview, Russell. People really appreciated what you had to offer, your bravery, your devotion, and your representation of the American people over there. The real American people is not lost on anyone, I'm sure, in free Ukraine. So welcome back.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be back with you again.
Yeah. I have a number of headlines here that I want to just, I sent them to you, but I want to read them real quick, and we'll jump kind of around and pick the ones we want to talk about. Just for our listeners to know, these are going up in our news headlines here momentarily. Russia planning for lightning war to take out Ukraine's capital. This is something from Bojo in the UK. That's his claim. Is it true? I don't know. We'll get to that. Idiot Biden said considering now to deploy 5,000 to 50,000 U.S. troops and equipment to Eastern Europe to further bolster NATO and counter the evil Russian buildup. This is all so ass backwards. It's unbelievable to me to even read this stuff. Kremlin says Ukraine amassing troops on line of contact in Donbass in apparent preparation for attack. Now, I'm reading headlines here. We're going to talk about these in just a minute with Russell. Donetsk Republic head confirms U.S. Javelin anti-tank missiles are now present in Donbass. They shouldn't be there, or should they? We'll see. Kiev accidentally or actively preparing for forceful resolution of the Donbass conflict. This is according to sources among Russell's people there in free Ukraine in the East. There are a bunch more of these things here, but keep in mind, this is not de-escalating. Israel is now planning a massive evacuation of Jewish citizens out of Ukraine. So what does that tell you? It tells you more of the same thing that you learn when you see that the U.S. is allegedly pulling out its personnel, Russia is pulling out its personnel, and the U.K. is now apparently going to begin evacuation of its diplomatic corps from Ukraine as well. So these are all unmistakable. A child could figure out what these mean, but they're going on, so they're happening. So, my friend, what's new since Friday, and what do you want to talk about amongst these things we just put on the table?
Well, the main thing to understand is that this peace proposal that the Russians put out back on December 21st, it's an 8-point proposal. They gave it to the U.S., to NATO, and to the EU. They've been waiting for a response. They are requiring a written response, which they gave the U.S. a week. It's been 2 weeks, and they still haven't gotten it. But the point of that is that in these 8 points, there was no mention even of the Donbass People's Republics. It was just about NATO and the U.S. and security guarantees for Russia from the NATO and U.S. that have not been forthcoming. And the Russians said that if they don't get these security guarantees, then they will take care of their security by military technical means. They use that exact phrase, military technical means. So military means, of course, kinetic shooting cannons, stuff like that. Technical means electronic warfare, which, you know, Russia is unmatched in the world right now in electronic warfare capabilities. I mean, they can basically shut down Europe, you know, from the Russian border. You know, they can prevent, you know, the spoof GPS, prevent planes from flying, you know, basically even stuff on the ground, they can just turn it off.
And Russell, am I correct? One other thing we might want to add into that mix. Can the Russians, in your opinion, create significant or substantially destructive blackouts over large urban areas? Do they have that capability, do you think?
I think they do. I mean, what they have shown so far is the ability to basically turn off F-35s and the Aegis missile defense system on the Donald Cook in the Black Sea some years ago.
Oh, that was a laugh. I remember that. I had to laugh. Mm-hmm. I still laugh. Jeez.
I mean, and that was them, you know, trying to be nice and saying, you know, we can break both your arms without even breaking a sweat, but we're not doing it. We're not going to hurt you now, but we can anytime we want. So it was them showing their capabilities. Unfortunately, the people that run the U.S. Government and military aren't taking that as seriously as they should. And, I mean, if Ukraine, and it's a very serious situation here on the front lines. I'm about 5 miles right now from the front lines. The Ukrainians are continuing to bolster their troops and equipment. They're bringing it in more and more every day.
Every day.
They have,
so they're not slowing down.
Day.
Okay.
No, it's, and in fact, it's increasing substantially recently. And we're talking about the Ukrainian army. We're talking about the neo-Nazi battalions, Pravi Sector, Azov, Idar, like that.
Right.
We're talking about ISIS terrorists that have been working with the Ukrainian army for years now. I mean,
when we last talked, Russell, excuse me, but when we last talked 6-7 years ago, you were the first person, as far as I know, to make that known, that these terrorists, these Muslim killers were coming in there. And I think it was in Odessa where they were first seen, but I may be
mm-hmm.
wrong. They're there and they have never left. So they're probably stronger than they were then. Much stronger,
a lot
I would
stronger
think.
Now. And I mean, you know, I was, I think, among the very first people to make that known, but it has been reported and confirmed by, like, the New York Times. I believe The Intercept has done some other stuff. I mean, there's, you know, serious, legitimate journalistic outlets. Well, if you can call The New York Times serious, but it's been reported by, you know, mainstream media and respected alt media that this is a fact. And these guys... I mean, the things that they've done in Syria are, you know, beyond nightmare. And one of the things that they've done is made false flag chemical attacks and tried to blame it on the Syrian government. And so these guys are specialists in that, and that, you know, it's extremely, absolutely possible and even likely that they're going to try something like that here again.
This is really not a good situation. It would seem to me that we obviously only have two potentials here. Either Russia starts militarily to intervene and keep that line of demarcation somewhat stable, rather than have the 100 and however many thousand Ukrainian fascist troops race in there, 5 miles. What's that,
mm-hmm.
5 minutes in a car, 4 minutes in a tank?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does Russia move first, or does Kiev and its fascists move first?
Well, the great hope is that Russia, I mean, and of course, Russia's electronic and human intelligence has completely penetrated the Ukrainian government and army. You know, they know everything that gets said between the U.S. masters and their Ukrainian attack dogs. So they will have, you know, a window of opportunity to preemptively strike before. I mean, the order comes from Washington. Okay, we're going tomorrow at dawn, and
got it.
You know, there needs to be some hours. You know, before you can't, you know, just turn on the switch and all of a sudden the whole line attacks. But it can happen very quickly, but not instantly. In that window of opportunity between the time that Washington gives the order and the Ukrainians start to move, that's when the Russians really have to make their move. First of all, in order to save, you know, tens of thousands of civilians here, because, like I said, it's 5 miles from where I am right now, and I live kind of close to the front, but to the center of the city, it's less than 10 miles, you know. So once...
How many people, Russ, how many people live there?
A million people live in Donetsk. There's about 2.5 million in the whole republic, and about a million in Donetsk.
Those bastards would have no problem slaughtering as many humans as they could. That's my take on this.
They're genuine Nazis. They have swastika tattoos, Nazi flags. They say Heil Hitler and Slava Bandera, who was a horrific war criminal, Ukrainian Nazi collaborator during the Second World War, right here, who himself, you know, and the OUN, the Ukrainian army, that collaborated with the German Nazis during the occupation in the Second World War. They slaughtered, you know, tens of thousands of civilians, and that's exactly what they're saying that they want to do and are going to do if they get the chance. So the thing is, if Russia doesn't take the initiative once they know the attack is coming,
yes, yes,
you know, all these Ukrainian soldiers, all this armor, once it comes into the urban area, once it gets mixed in with our civilians, then it's a whole completely different dynamic, because
block, you know, to block, Russians, house to house. Oh yeah.
And the Russians, I mean, their advantage is, you know, air power, heavy artillery, missiles,
right,
and rockets.
Right.
During 2014 and 2015, the Ukrainian army made a major offensive. They made two major offensives, and they tried to go around the cities in order to reach the Russian border, which is about 50 miles from Donetsk, east of Donetsk, and to close off the border. But they made a huge mistake because, you know, by traveling through open terrain, you know, they were easy pickings for grad rockets and heavy artillery,
yeah,
and they got annihilated. So they're not going to make that mistake again.
They're going to go right into the heart of Donetsk. That's my take. They're going to, yeah.
Exactly. If they come into the center of the city, then they have all our civilians to use as human shields against the, you know, artillery, rockets, air power, and then it becomes a long, drawn out, you know,
gruesome,
urban,
horrible
warfare.
The worst kind of war. You don't want that kind of fight. You don't
exactly
want that kind of fight
worst
at all.
Kind of
no. No, this is really another dynamic that no one's talking about. I haven't seen it in print anywhere, what you just presented, and it is crucially important. It would suggest to me that with all the intel and penetration that Russia has gained over what you call Ukraine, Western Ukraine, they know precisely what's going on. If they don't move first, and I don't care if it's with, I'm just speaking for myself, not for Russell or anyone else. If they don't move first, even with tactical nukes, small ones, if they have to knock out the great majority of that hundred and how many thousand do you think they're on the line
at
now?
At least 125,000 on the line.
Right,
if they don't, the entire Ukrainian army.
If they don't take a big substantial portion of that out of action immediately before there's a forward move into Donetsk, we're into the morass you've just described. It'd be horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Well, there's no chance that they're going to use tactical nukes. So there's no need for them to. The fact is, the Ukrainian army has done, like, internal surveys of their frontline troops.
Right.
And, you know, basically anonymous surveys, like, you know, the red or the white marble, black marble type thing. 80% of the Ukrainian soldiers don't want to fight. You know, they, you know, if the Russians, you know, they hear that the attack order is given, and they immediately publicly announce, okay, look, Russia is coming in. We're coming in right now. If you see Russian soldiers, Russian tanks, Russian planes, if you shoot at them, you will be destroyed. If you don't shoot at them, you will be treated fairly and as prisoners of war, whatever, and you will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they say that, then 80% of the guys are going to just get out of their tanks, put down their guns, and walk away, you know. 20%, that's going to be the ISIS dudes, the hardcore neo-Nazis, and the war criminals, the officers that have been given orders for war crimes for the last 8 years, they're going to fight because they know that, you know, they'd rather die than get what they got coming, you know. So, but that's 20%, but that changes the whole dynamic there again because, you know, all of a sudden it goes from, you know, 125,000 to 25,000, you know. And so Russia doesn't have to use anything, you know, nuclear or you know, anything too heavy. They just come in and say, look, if they have the ability from their conventional weapons to take out, you know, whatever needs taken out all the way. The thing is that they're also, because they, the strategic objective is not just to protect the people of Donbass. The strategic objective is to denazify Ukraine, put in a, you know, reasonable, you know, friendly government. They're not looking to control Ukraine.
They don't want to, well, yeah.
They don't want to occupy Ukraine. They just want to denazify Ukraine, not to have rabid dogs right on their, exactly on their border. So they're not just coming into Donbass. They're going to come in at least as far as Kiev, you know. And
could they take out or take down Kiev in short order?
No problem. Short order. As we've been saying, it's a weekend affair and lunch in Kiev on Monday.
Got it. Now, you're talking about what may be an unprecedented thing. I've not heard this, and I'm sure it's happened in the past at some level, but a PSYOP where the Russians would announce to all the so-called frontline troops from the West who are on the line of demarcation or the contact line, you either drop your weapons, walk with your hands up here or there, everywhere, and of course some of their own kind would shoot them, I'm sure, if they did. But if you don't hang it up, you're going to die. We're going to flatten you. And they could do it. They could do it. So that's a PSYOP, the likes of which I don't remember seeing very often in world history, literally giving them a chance of life or death. Make your choice.
Well, I mean, understand that Ukrainians and Russians have been like fraternal people for 1,000 years. You know, it's not
sure.
Russia doesn't want to come in. You know, I mean, it's like these Nazis, they really say, you know, we're going to do genocide. We don't want these people in Donbass. We just want their land, their factories, their buildings. You know, that's one thing. But what the Russians are saying is, hey, you know, let's be friends. They've tried every way possible to make peace for 8 years here. And they, you know, they've stuck to international law. They haven't been aggressive, you know, even when they could or even perhaps should have been. But now, I mean, there's no use in trying to continue the Minsk agreement or any kind of diplomatic thing. You know, I mean, even with, you know, with the U.S. and NATO, you know, I mean, they understand that it doesn't really matter whatever the U.S. says or signs. You know, it's like what I always say about the U.S. politicians, you know, that what they say means nothing and what they do means everything. And what they're doing is continuing to escalate, continuing to reinforce the front. So obviously they're, you know, they're pushing for war. If the Ukrainians are to attack Donbass, that will be a trigger for the Russians to come in for sure.
How many more troops do you think Kiev is going to push toward the line of contact? Are they pretty well maxed out now? What's your intel? And I don't want you to give anything up here, obviously, but what's your thinking on it?
It's, you know, I don't really have any, you know, secret contacts or secret information, but it's publicly known that there's 125,000 troops on the contact line right now. And that's literally half of the active Ukrainian army. So it's actually a really foolish move on their part because, you know, the Russians just have a 200-mile-long target. And, you know, once they handle that, then the Ukrainian army is in half, you know. And it's a long border with Russia and Belarus. And Belarus has already said they're actually having military exercises right now between Russia and Belarus. And, you know, Belarus is like 50 miles from Kiev. And, you know, so they can literally be there the next morning.
It's incredible. What's the deal about the Javelin, U.S. Javelin anti-tank missiles now in Donbass?
When Trump actually sent the missiles, excuse me, first, and he said, you know, these are for defense They're not to be used on Donbass. They're to be used in case of a Russian incursion. But they are now on the line of Donbass, and they have actually been used, not against armor, but against our bunkers, our trench positions. And it's interesting, too, the British have just sent a couple of thousand of light anti-tank weapons. And it was discovered once they got to Kiev that these rockets, these anti-tank rockets, they have a 20-year shelf life. And after 20 years, they become like unstable and, you know, unreliable and kind of dangerous to fire. And all these rockets that the British have sent the Ukrainians are on their 20 years old. So basically, they have to be used this year, or then it starts getting
sketchy. Their shelf life. That's funny. I was actually told this by a source recently, that there is an awful lot of aging military equipment and inventory that needs to be used up and then replaced with brand new, expensive, shiny, sparkly stuff. You get it? You got it.
Yeah.
All right. All you people out there, I'm sure, understand. It's all about shelf life and inventory and making a buck. All right. Hold on. We'll be right back with Russell Bentley in just a minute. Conversation exclusive with Russell Texas Bentley, a friend of ours for a long time, 7-8 years now. He is there, 5 miles from the front line, where the 125,000 are spread out.
Yep.
If the Russians say, we're coming in, go ahead and surrender or pay the price, how are they going to do it in time to keep that 125,000 from surging, racing into Donetsk?
Well, we have some very brave and skilled and dedicated defenders along the
like
front
yourself.
Line, too. I mean, it's...
Yes, like
well,
Russell
Bentley. I'm not in the Army anymore, but I'll be a good partisan if I need to.
Yes, you will.
But, you know, we have our preparations as well. We're not... defenseless by any means. And of course, you know, in military strategy, it's always easier to defend a position than it is to attack it. In fact, you need about
three to one
in order to expect to be successful. And we've got about 60,000 troops on the front line of our own, so we've got about, you know, it's
well
about
I didn't know line. That That's very impressive.
Yeah. And
so if you want to stack it up 3-1, that's 180 on the defense and 125 on the offense, so to speak. Interesting.
Well, no, it's 60,000 on the defense is enough.
Well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
But you triple that because they're going to fight three times as hard, basically.
Yeah.
If you want to look at
and,
it
you know,
that
it's,
way.
So our guys, you know, back in 2014, 2015, I mean, it was really like a militia, more or less, just people defending. I mean, we were using SKSs.
And, I remember.
You know, deer rifles and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah.
And now it's very disciplined, very standardized,
right.
Basically a real army now. People here are very proud of their soldiers. I mean, there's a lot of stuff more that they could and should be getting and help that they just don't have, but they're doing the best they can with what they have. And you know, it's a very, you know, combat hardened, experienced, effective military unit. And,
I'm very
you
impressed.
Understand
yes,
that we have no place to go. These people are defending their own families, their own homes. You know, there's no strategic depth. There's no place to retreat. You know, we're on the city limits of our cities. And I mean, literally the Russian border is 50 miles away and there's no, you know, no place to go. So we're going to stay and fight. You know, my wife and I, we're on the front line area of Donetsk and, we're not going anywhere either. You know, I still have, my AK-47 and You know, I'll use it if I have to. I mean, it doesn't work too well against artillery or tanks, but, you know, I'm not going anywhere. She's not going anywhere. Her family lives here. They're not going anywhere. You know, this is our land. We're going to defend it. And as Alexander Nevsky, you know, one of the great Russians of history said, if you come to Russia with a weapon in your hand, you will die by that weapon. And there's Russian people here. We're ethnically Russian, and so we're not going anywhere. We will defend whatever.
That's very comes. Very inspiring, Russ. Very inspiring to a lot of people around the world who are listening right now. We get it. We know what's going on. We know. We understand fully what's going on there. Most of us out here. So don't think we don't. Now let me ask one question about Kiev. How would the Russians, paratroops? How close to the border, if they were to knock out Kiev, how would that happen? Just briefly.
Well, they'd just start rolling in. Of course, they'd be using their airborne troops, too, which are among the most excellent trained airborne troops in the world. You know, there would be, I mean, like I said, it's like less than 50 miles from the Belarusian border to the city of Kiev. And you understand, again, that half of the whole Ukrainian army is down in Donbass. So they've got half their army to defend the whole rest of their country. So they'll come up from Crimea. They'll make landings from the Black Sea, amphibious troops. They'll use their air power to, you know, and their missiles to knock out the command and control centers. You know, that's of course the first thing, just like, you know, basically what, it'll be like the, you know, Desert Storm, you know, the first thing they'll do is hit the, you know, the command and control centers and then, start moving their troops in, you know, and really it can be, you know, like Desert Storm was basically, a turkey shoot and, over in a week.
We have, so much to look at when you talk about Russian armor, Russian missiles. The Iskander, I think they're in their M version now, if I'm not mistaken. That's an awesome weapon. These are not little toys. They're incredibly well equipped and brilliantly designed and ready to go. And if this happens, I would look to Russia to write a new chapter in the book of military technology, seriously, and tactics. I think that's what we're looking at here. Is there much of a buildup in Crimea that you've heard about?
Yes, in fact, there is. They've, I mean, people, you know, sometimes don't understand what really happened there back in 2014. And the fact was that after the fall of the Soviet Union, Russia had a 100-year treaty, a contract with Ukraine to maintain their naval base in Sevastopol. And under that, they paid them $100 million a year to keep the base that they had had during the Soviet Union. And under that treaty, under that contract, Russia was allowed to have 25,000 troops in Crimea. So, you know, when people say, oh, Russia invaded Crimea, well, that's either, you know, a mistake or a lie, because
that's a lie.
The troops were already there.
Right. You know, they were there by treaty, of course. Yeah, I understand.
And all that they did was when the people there decided to have a referendum, you know, they came out on the street and they called them the polite green men. And they just made sure that, you know, the people that were voting didn't get, you know, harassed or oppressed or anything like that. They just made sure that it was a legitimate vote. So there was 25,000 there before, and they have been getting heavily reinforced in the last few months in Crimea, which is now a part of Russia. So again, the Russians are moving their military on their territory. You know, they built the Crimean Bridge, and so they've been
moving. That bridge is one of the great wonders of the world, in my view. That was an incredible achievement. True,
it was. I've been across it, and it's pretty cool, and it has road and rail. So they, you know, they have the ability to move a lot of stuff, you know, pretty quick across there, and they've been doing that. So Crimea is heavily reinforced. the southern district, which includes Rostov, which is the military district closest mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. The Ukrainian border, is the most powerful military district besides the Moscow district. So, I mean, they have...
Is it? I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. The Rostov district, the southern district, is very, very well-equipped, very, very powerful.
Understood.
They have a lot of the newest, mm-hmm. best equipment, mm-hmm. and they know how to use it.
Well, I'm just saying, again, that Iskander-M is, I've watched the development of this particular weapon, ground to ground. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a better one. It is awesome.
And even the Grad missile, you know, which is from, you know, Soviet
sure.
times.
Well, that's but World
it shoots,
War II, almost.
40 rockets on the back of a truck, 220 yeah. millimeters long, about 3 meters 220 millimeters diameter, 3 meters long, and basically, it's basically the same thing. Multiple launch rocket systems, and they have the Uragan and the Smersh too. I mean, these things, you know, one battalion can basically, they call it treating an area, which basically means kill everything in it.
Every living thing in it, understood.
And, you know, armor, trucks, whatever. You know, and it can handle 70 football fields, you know, at a time.
One Grad rocket system?
No. I mean, but like one battalion.
Okay, got it. All right, the full battalion. Now, let me go. Yeah. We're going to jump to something else here that you said last time
okay.
that is of concern, and that has to do with biowarfare. Do you have indications that the Kiev government is prepared to have its military or part of its military use biological weapons against the people in the East, such as botulinum, which we talked
mm-hmm.
about briefly?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not the Kiev government. Again, it is the U.S. mercenaries specifically have, and I'm reading this from an article that an announcement was made by Sergei Shoigu, who is the defense minister of the Russian Federation, who himself specifically said they have chemical weapons, they have biological weapons. These are under the control of 120 American mercenaries. Blackwater is in the cities of Avdiivka
yeah.
and Krasny Luch, which is maybe 15 miles from where I live. And, I mean... And you understand, and I mean, in this one particular article, they're saying, well, here, let me see what it goes. Are these mercenaries somehow controlled by the armed forces of Ukraine? And the answer is no. The armed forces of Ukraine are under the mercenaries' control.
Okay,
comes from abroad.
Uh-huh. Now, there was a statement made, and I'm going to bring on my colleague in just a moment. There was a statement made by Putin. I think it was Putin. He said, not only will they take out those who use weapons like that, but they will also take out those who instructed them to launch such bioweapons. Is that correct?
He did say that. Yes, he said exactly that.
Okay.
He said, we will hit the places where the weapons are launched from, and we will hit the places where the orders were given.
Okay, I think all of you out there can connect those dots pretty easily. Let's bring on now my colleague, and I want to introduce you to her, Erica Kahn. Say hello to Russell Bentley.
Hello, Russell.
Hi, Erica. Nice to meet
you. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
He's right on the front line there. Erica is an MIT biophysiologist with a strong background, a specialty in nanotechnology as well. She understands botulinum. She understands biowarfare. We've been working on this fake pandemic for the last year. But I mentioned this to her, and I wanted to get her in here to tell us a little bit about botulinum, which apparently, according to what Russell just told us, is there at the behest of, shall we say, the alleged commander-in-chief of this country, who has American mercenaries under his thumb, allegedly, And that's where the connection is. So, Erica, tell us what botulinum is. And it's a bad news bioweapon, just for openers. Go ahead.
Well, it's a toxin produced by a bacteria known as Clostridia botulinum. And it's a very potent nerve toxin. And typically you would get it through eating improperly prepared or canned foods. It's anaerobic. And essentially it causes paralysis. And it's very difficult if you don't know what you're looking at or you're have any idea that you've been infected by it, you might not know that this is, your symptoms are being caused by this bacterial toxin. So part of the challenge in treating it is to accurately identify what it is and then get the treatment going. There is an antidote. Typically it's an antibody produced in horses. I don't know, you know, what sort of stocks they have, you know, readily available to treat, you know, large numbers of people that might be sprayed with something like this. You know, it can be very easily aerosolized and enter the body that way. But the trick here is identifying, you know, what the cause of people's symptoms are in
any
time enough to do something
warfare,
about it. Yeah.
In any bio-war, you've got to be able to do that. Let me say one quick thing and then get back to Russell. This stuff is so deadly. A single gram. How much is a gram, Erica? Let's do an eyeball thing. What would a gram look like if we could see it? A fly speck?
Oh, no. Well, okay, for people that take supplements, imagine a capsule.
Uh-huh.
You know, the average capsule is probably 500 milligrams. So
okay.
Multiply that by 2 and you have 1 gram.
All right. 1 gram of crystalline, which is, let's call it freeze-dried botulinum, evenly dispersed and inhaled, can kill more than 1 million people. 1 gram.
That's toxic.
Russell? What are we thinking about this? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's pretty scary, you know, especially, I mean, they say that this stuff is in the city of Avdiivka. I served on that exact front myself back in 2017. I have friends that are there right now. You know, it's a very scary situation, you know. And, I mean, it is the information about it is exactly specific. And it's, I mean, they said that they first brought in on U.S. Air Force planes in October. They brought in the antidote to Kiev and then transferred it to Avdiivka. And then in November, they brought in the actual botulinum, and that's now in Avdiivka, too, in a town called Krasny Luch that's a little bit further back. And, you know, these guys, you know, these are the same kind of guys that did the chemical attacks in Syria, you know, that they made a false flag attack. They murdered civilians, even little kids, just to film them dead and dying and
right.
Say that it was the Syrian government that did it. You know, and there's, you know, they've been totally, you know, debunked and proven that it was ISIS and the White Helmets that actually did this to try and blame it on the Assad government. But, you know, these are the same kind of guys. And, you know, it's extremely possible that that they can do the same thing here, you know, and try and blame it and say, oh, you know, the Russians or the Donbass tried to use chemical weapons and
they'll reverse it. Of course, they,
you know?
Of course, of course. Erica, so the idea of treating, let's say, tens of thousands of people who have been infected with this botulinum bioweapon in its freeze-dried format or whatever they're going to use it as, I guess the Russians would have to provide you with the antidote, correct, Russell? And Erica, you can't just wait until this is already done. You've got to prepare for it, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, the sooner the better, because some of this nerve damage can be permanent. It is generally reversible, though, unless they've tweaked it. which if it's a weapon, they may have.
Go ahead, Russell.
It's a scary situation, you know. I mean, of course, biological and chemical weapons are prohibited by the Geneva Convention, you know, so it's a war crime to use them. But that's not the kind of thing that generally stops, you know, the U.S. and NATO these days. You know, some of our troops have gas masks. Some don't. A lot don't. But, you know, it's all we can do is stand in our positions and try and deal with them as best we can. You know, I mean, the real truth, you know, these are genuine heroes that are defending the republics here. And the real truth is, you know, it's not like the difference between us and the Nazis is these Nazis, they say, oh, we want to go to Donbass and kill, you know, Russians or separatists. And what we say standing on the front line defending our own families and homes is we're ready to die to defend our own families and homes, you know. So that's the big difference, the good guys versus the bad guys. It's pretty easy to tell which is which, and hopefully the Russians will come in and handle the situation before it gets too far out of hand. You know, one of the things, too, that makes this in the interest of Russia is that if Russia is going to have to deal with Ukraine after they liberate it, then, you know, the quicker and less destructive the liberation is, the better, because, you know, if all the cities are blown up, if all the factories are blown up, if all the roads and bridges are blown up, you know, then all that stuff has to be repaired before Ukraine can get back. So the sooner the Russians come in, you know, the sooner they do a lightning quick takeout of who needs to be taken out and neutralization of the rest of the threat, then the better for them, you know, not just for us, but for them as well.
Okay, real quick. Anything you want to add to that, Erica, by way of treatment? What is the process? Does it take time? Is it a one-shot injection kind of an antidote? What is it?
That I'm not sure. I think there's a couple different options in terms of what they've come up with for an antidote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm not in a position to answer that.
Russell, if the Russians know about this, and they knew about it probably before the weaponry was even brought in, they know most likely where it is, and I would think that they would target a number of rockets for that particular sector just to level everything.
For sure.
Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, because that's one of the, I mean, and in fact, you know, there's also Ukraine has 12 bioweapons research labs that are controlled by the U.S.
They're called BSL labs. Yes, yes.
Yeah,
12.
Wow. There's a dozen of them in Ukraine. These are also extremely dangerous threats to, you know, the future of Ukraine and something that's going to have to be dealt with, you know, very professionally and carefully when this liberation comes through. Because they remain, you know, a genuine threat to not just Ukraine, but to Russia as well.
Are there any tactical nukes on the other side that you're facing that you've heard about?
I haven't heard anything about that. I don't think that the Americans have enough of a presence. Now, there's 10,000 NATO troops, at least officially confirmed, 10,000 NATO troops in Ukraine, of which 4,000 of them are U.S. troops. There's, you know, plus on top of that, however many mercenaries, however many, you know,
Blackwater
whoever
types.
Else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not really enough for them to be able to control and deploy tactical nukes. I mean, and plus, it would be, you know, beyond insane for them to even, you know, to even have them there much.
Well, the response would be flattening.
Yeah.
Utterly destructive. Okay, Erica, thank you for stopping by on that. Botulinum is bad news. It is there, apparently. We'll have to wait and see. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff.
Okay. Russell, what is your best guess then on our time frame here at this point?
Well, I personally think it'll be before the end of March. You know, in February coming up very shortly, it's the Olympics in Beijing again. Right. Just like in 2008 when Saakashvili, the Georgian military attacked South Ossetia and the mm-hmm. you know, separatists there and the Russian peacekeepers, which Russia handled very quickly. You know, but I mean, also the Maidan in 2014 was started during the Russian Winter Olympics in Sochi. So,
oh, that's, you know, these, right. I forgot about that. It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, this you know, it's a pattern that,
gotcha.
You know, and yeah. So now here comes the, you know, it was funny. There was a real amateur disinformation that came out saying that the Chinese Prime Minister Xi has asked Putin not to attack during the Olympics. You know, I mean, and that's so ridiculous.
It's absurd.
Because
talk
well,
about
I mean,
misdirection. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you and your friend are watching a movie and the house catches on fire and your friend says, "Hey, wait, don't worry about the house. Let's finish watching the movie." You know? I mean, so of course he didn't ask
you.
That. Of course Putin wouldn't agree to it anyway. I mean, this is a, you know,
no,
a existential
no.
threat, you know, a serious, you know, potential world war situation. And so, you know, I mean, yeah, of course the Olympics are important and cool and all that stuff, but they, you know, there's not even any comparison. If it kicks off during the Olympics, then it kicks off, you know, I mean,
okay,
so by the
very
end
good.
Of March, I'm pretty sure that, this thing will be, you know, shaken out one way or the other. You know, I hope that it will become sooner than later, not because I want war, but because the sooner the Russians make their move, the longer they wait, the more difficult it's going to become, you know, and especially with, you know, Biden talking about bringing in airborne troops and all that stuff. I mean,
oh, up to 50,000. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's,
maybe 10 times the five. So there you go.
That's serious. And I mean, it isn't any good for anybody because, you know, this kind of thing, you know, right now it can be handled between Russia and Ukraine. You know, Ukraine is not in NATO. You know, there's obviously good reasons for Russia to do what they have to do to defend itself. But if the U.S. and NATO start getting involved in this themselves, you know, then it goes to, you know, potential world war type situation, you know, so.
Right.
The longer
this could get, it could get out of hands. The longer they wait,
the more dangerous it becomes.
Exactly. Correct. Precisely. Russell, I'm here. You know how to get in touch with me if you need anything. This is your platform. So you just use it any way you need to let the world know what's going on there. We want to help. And we're here.
All right. Well, you've been a great help over the years, Jeff, and I'm real proud
sure.
to be friends with you, and
you.
I'll be in touch for sure.
Okay, my friend. All right. Good night.
Okay, good night.
Russell Texas Bentley in live from free Ukraine, and we'll be right back with more. Hang on.